On Monday, the Trump administration unveiled new rules for legal immigrants, denying them permanent residency or citizenship status if they use public benefits. Acting USCIS Director Ken Cuccinelli went on NPR's Morning Edition on Tuesday to defend the decision, where he called the public charge rule, quote, central to our immigration history. He went on to reinterpret the poem on the plaque of the Statue of Liberty.
Give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own 2 feet and who will not become a public charge.
The bootstraps narrative has long been a part of American history, and Cuccinelli's remarks got me thinking about who historically has been welcome into this country, who is considered deserving of citizenship, and the idea that some are more of a burden than others. Ian Haney-Lopez is here to discuss, and he's a law professor at the University of California, Berkeley. Ian, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing well and pleased to be able to join you.
So when you heard Ken Cuccinelli's words, and not just his what mentioned there, but on this recently announced public charge rule, what were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts were this is another edition of Donald Trump's dog whistle politics. This is another effort to try and connect up people of color with welfare to generate the message that state resources that are necessary for all working families are actually being wasted on undeserving people. And there's an important element here. The way this was linked, not just to welfare, but to the notion of scarcity, that we face a crisis of scarcity in our country and that undeserving people are taking our resources. To the extent we do face a crisis of scarcity, it's manufactured by massive tax cuts to billionaires, not by other working people drawing on public benefits as they seek to create a successful life for themselves and their children.
Now, Ian, I do want to bring in one point, though. Like, the Trump administration, it may be the latest example of this, but this has also been something that the U.S. government has done with other groups in the past. Can we talk a little bit about the history of how the U.S. government has either connected citizenship and race or has really decided who deserves to become a citizen?
It's important to connect it up. So this public charge law, everybody says, well, this is an 1882 law. Sure, it's part of when the federal government begins to regulate immigration in a serious way. And it corresponds with this idea that there are undeserving people who are entering the country. And so, you know, the public charge is associated also with illness, but it's also closely associated with the 1882 Chinese Exclusion Act. And so from the inception of this country, we've had two traditions of immigration, two traditions of citizenship. One tradition says, welcome to the United States, come join this country, work hard, you or your children will be full members of this society. But another suppressed tradition, a tradition that we do not celebrate, but that is persistent, is a sense that some people will be here but do not deserve to be members of our society. And that applied to Native Americans. The United States did not fully grant birthright citizenship to Native Americans until 1940. It applied to immigrants who wanted to naturalize, that is, immigrants who wanted to gain citizenship not by birth but by naturalization. There was a restriction that said you had to be a white person in our naturalization laws until 1952. So we've always had this other tradition. It is applied with particular ugliness against Asians, against Mexicans, against African Americans, right? The whole Dred Scott case, there's always been this ugly tradition. Some people don't deserve to be American, and it's often been racialized. That's the conversation we're having again today.
I want to actually, and I want to bring that forward to the Ken Cuccinelli comment again, because really at the heart of the Emma Lazarus poem, for a lot of Americans, it points to this ideal that we welcome people into this country regardless of what they can contribute. Your
right.
Huddled masses yearning to breathe free.
Right.
Let's talk about at any point in our history, was that immigration policy embraced, or was it just part of an American narrative that made us feel better?
It's both. So there are cycles, and there are periods in which immigration to the United States is quite close to open and welcoming. That would be the sort of post-Civil War era, large-scale immigration from Europe through around 1920, you're starting to get these laws, but they're only loosely applied. So large-scale immigration is welcome from Europe, including Southern and Eastern Europe. The border is more or less porous and open with Mexico, and there's a circulatory migration pattern. People are coming back and forth. That changes. It changes. Well, even in that period, we should be clear, that was the era of the Chinese Exclusion Act, and there were, and in fact, U.S. constitutional immigration law is founded on a series of cases that uphold the ability of Congress to exclude groups on the basis of racial dislike. There's a series of cases, Che Chan Ping and Fong Yuting, in which the court asks, can Congress exclude the Chinese because they're perceived as racially inferior? Mm-hmm. And the court says, yes, they're seen as an Oriental invasion. They're seen as a threat to the civilization on the West Coast. Congress has the power to exclude these people. So there's that happening. But the borders are more or less open for European immigration, more or less open, largely open in terms of the southern border. And yet there's a backlash develops, a narrative that says we're being flooded by racial inferiors. In this case, the supposed racial inferiors were Jews and Italians and Poles, Southern and Eastern European, non-Northern and Western European stock in the language of the time. And then the U.S. slams the border shut on Europe in 1921 and again 1924. And then with the Great Depression, and then again in the sort of the Red Scare in the 1950s, the United States begins to harden the border with Mexico and begins to limit immigration. So we go through these cycles, but there are times when we come closer to honoring the ideal that every person has the potential to contribute to society, and deserves to be the dignity of being recognized as a member of the society, and eras in which we go in a quite different direction, and nativism and xenophobia and racism, and frankly, I would not sharply distinguish those terms, that these combine to create a panic among the American public.
Ian Haney-Lopez is a law professor at the University of California, Berkeley. Ian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.